Okay, so welcome everyone to this workshop. It's a panel workshop on the topic of COSA sponsorship. And I'd like to just remind everybody that we are recording this, and in order to be able to make this as broadly used as possible, we're asking that people observe the same kind of guidelines we use at the COSA conventions for speakers or for workshop leaders. And that is to, in observance of our traditions as well, to not refer to other any other outside interests by name. So that could include other fellowships, that could include authors, other workshops or types of recovery treatments. Those are the kinds of things that I'm referring to as outside. And it's not that you can't refer to having had some other kind of support, just don't name them, please. And that goes for both our panelists as well as those who will be asking questions at the end of the, or, you know, at, during the question and response time. Just a word about who we imagine are out there listening. You might be currently a sponsor in COSA and looking for some additional support. You may have some questions specifically of challenges you've come up with and want to hear others ESH, experience, strength, and hope. You might be considering sponsoring in COSA for the first time and just wanting to ask some questions or have some questions about that. And then also we are welcoming those who are looking for sponsors, because this will be a great panel to ask some questions of if you are in that mode as well. So why don't we begin? I'm going to say the Serenity Prayer. If you would, just all please take a moment to say it silently yourselves. So just a moment of silence. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So my name is Carrie M. I'm going to be moderating a panel, and our panelists are COSAs who all have experience with sponsoring. And part of what I think you'll see is that there is no one-size-fits-all for sponsoring, and I think you'll hear that in our panelists' chairs and responses to your questions. The first part of the workshop is going to be devoted to each of the panelists sharing a little bit about, I'd encourage them to think about sharing about the following types of questions: how they decided to start sponsoring, how they actually sponsor, some examples of how they sponsor themselves, any lessons learned about sponsoring that they wish they had known sooner, and if anyone has co-sponsoring experience, what their experience, strength, and hope was with that and how it worked. And co-sponsoring, for those who might be new to the program and listening to this workshop, co-sponsoring is where two or more COSAs work together who are wanting to work the steps but unable to find a traditional sponsor, and they are using what you might think of as a buddy system to work each of the steps together. And that there's all sorts of forms that can take, which you'll hear about. And then I also asked if each of the panelists have any time that they might share what experience, strength, and hope they have with their own sponsor or co-sponsor if they're working with a co-sponsor. So before we begin, and Sarah S., you're going to be the first one who I'm going to just put you up in the queue to share, and then it will be Joey, and then Claudia, and then Deborah, and Linda, in that order. I'm going to do just a really quick reading that I think is just a wonderful example of what I'm hoping you'll get more from this workshop. So the kinds of things that newcomers are, there's so many things that are very consistent that I know in my own experience I've heard from newcomers, but I want to share a reading that really struck home for me and just an example of what one sponsor response might be. So it's not unusual for a newcomer to say something like, I have a life, not just this program. Work deadlines, family obligations, bills, things I have to get done. I have a lot of responsibility, and it isn't going to go away just because I'm in recovery. And now I have all these new things I'm supposed to do, meetings and phone calls and literature and the steps. I desperately need some time off just to catch up with my real life. So here's what a sponsor might respond with, and I want to encourage you to listen for a couple of things, because in my own experience, some of the best sponsoring messages I've gotten are the ones where my sponsor is given just a general response and then very much sharing her own experience, strength, and hope related to that, the answer to this, and how to bring it into recovery perspective. And it's about using I terms only. So here's an example of what a sponsor might say. When I was active in my disease, time was my enemy. Sometimes I let obligations slide until a situation felt desperate. Sometimes I threw myself into my duties, worked without stopping, then burned out. Recovery offers me a simple way to deal with responsibilities one day at a time. Maintaining recovery by attending a meeting, making a call, and reading literature, things we do to stay sober today, takes less time than the hours we spent pursuing our addictions, indulging in them, being slowed down or stopped by them. Working on things consistently, even just a little each day, produces results in all areas of life. I no longer resent time for recovery any more than I resent the need for food and sleep. When we take time to recharge our batteries, we renew energy for the chores of our lives, become more focused and productive. In this way, surprisingly, our recovery actually gives us time. Nothing so urgent that I can't sit through a meeting, talk to my sponsor, or take a moment to pray. As I nourish my recovering self, I have more to offer, work and relationships. Today, time is on my side. So part of what I love about sponsoring is that it's all about making suggestions to my sponsees, and I know that's what's worked for me, coming from my own sponsors. So just to give you a sense, a little kickoff for our day right now, I'm going to be timing our panelists. And Sarah, if you can unmute yourself if you aren't already, and just say hello so I can make sure you're being heard.
Great. Hi, Carrie. It's Sarah. You can hear me, right?
Great. Yes, I can. So please feel free to go ahead, and I will be timing you.
Great. Thank you. Well, first, thank you, Carrie, for your service and putting this on. And part of why I agreed to do it was not only because God was calling me to, but also because I figured that I always have more to learn. So I was actually really looking forward to learning from the panelists as well as from the participants. And I've been taught that we're all experts and newcomers in recovery. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. And I'll just say, God, help me share what I need to share and help me learn what I need to learn from sharing today, and help me to be humble. Yeah, and I'm just going to kind of go through the list of questions here. So how I decided to start sponsoring, it was really interesting. I actually was very hesitant to start sponsoring. I was very fearful that I would harm other people, or that I wouldn't do it right, and that I would not be good at it, or that I would get codependent with people that I was sponsoring. And my sponsor had suggested to me that I was perhaps ready to sponsor, and said something like, how about we talk about it the next time we talk? And we had made an appointment to meet, I think, like a week later. And then in the meantime, someone had asked me to sponsor her. So that was kind of, it converged, and as I think God tends to do in my life. And so I decided to start sponsoring. Sort of by accident. And how I sponsor, I think that's a hard question to answer, but I'll say that when I first began sponsoring, which I think was about 5 years or so ago, I began sponsoring people with a lot of structure, and I tried to to follow books and things I had read about sponsorship, and I tried to sponsor exactly as how my sponsor sponsored. And my sponsor said to me at one point that perhaps at some point I would find my own sponsorship style, and I had no idea what was meant by that. But I think that in time I have found a sponsorship style, and I would say it varies from person to person. And at first I was very structured in the way that I sponsored, and since then I've actually loosened up quite a bit, which I think is more in keeping with who I am as a person as I've become more myself over the years. I do like structure, but I also like the ability to be spontaneous. So I sponsor a little bit differently for each of the people I sponsor based on who they are. The common themes are we work and focus on the step or the tradition, if that's where the person is interested in going after they've finished the step. I typically meet with sponsees by phone about once a week, and then we meet in person for the people that I sponsor in person. I have a couple sponsees who I sponsor more distant, but we typically talk on the phone about once a week for about a half an hour. I encourage them to call or check in with me as needed if stuff is going on in their life or if they have questions about sponsorship and or the steps. As they've come up. And I guess I would say, you know, I'm very clear with sponsees. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just another COSA who can offer my experience, strength, and hope on working with them. When I first began sponsoring, I was really keen on not being friends with anyone and just sponsoring them and focusing on the steps. And over time, I realized that it's also okay for me to be a COSA friend to someone too. It doesn't mean we don't still focus on the steps, but it's okay for me to offer my support and friendship and because that's kind of who I am as a person. I've learned a lot about myself in sponsoring. I would say some of the most important things I've learned are that I'm not responsible for someone else's program, that I can only offer suggestions. It's up to the person whether they take them or not. And I've also learned a lot about what my own values are, especially in working with people who are different than me and maybe have different values than I do. And that's been really helpful for me in becoming more humble and recognizing that I don't have the answers. When I've seen sponsees do things where I thought, oh, my God, that is not going to work out well. And to my surprise, it's worked out quite well. And, in fact, they learned many things or it worked out fabulously. And, you know, I don't have the answers. I only offer what God gives me. And the best sponsorship advice I ever got was to not sponsor people and to let God sponsor people through me. And that's been most helpful for me over the years. And my sponsor was also very good about encouraging me to ask other people for their experience, strength, and hope on different subjects and on step work or things like that if I felt stuck or confused. And I've
Sarah, this is just a gentle reminder to wrap up.
Great, thank you. And I've also asked other people that I sponsor to do that as well. I'm a firm believer that, you know, my whole program did not come from just contact with my sponsor. I reach out to a lot of other people in programs for support and guidance. And I encourage sponsees to do that as well, especially if they're needing help or support around issues or step work that I don't have. Yes, Sean, I encourage them to talk to other people, and I think in that way the whole fellowship provides sponsorship. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And just a reminder for those on the call or if you've joined us since we started, everyone is on mute, and our speakers are just going to be, to keep the line as clear as possible, unmuting to speak and then remuting themselves, and then we'll open it up for questions later. So Joey Z is our next panelist. Joey, are you on the line?
I am.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Joey Z, COSA, co-addict, codependent. I started my when I first got into the program, there were not telemeetings. There was only the local meeting that I helped start in my town. It was a small group. And so I kept telling myself that I was going to do some step work this week, and the week would come and go, and I wouldn't do it. And so finally I decided I needed to have a set time period to do my step work. So I got another fellow COSA to join me, and we met. We were step buddies. We met a couple hours every Saturday morning, and we would check in when we first got there. We would work for, you know, an hour and a half or so, and then we would reconnect and share if anything came up for us. And that was just really good. That was the kind of kickstart that I needed. Shortly thereafter, I went to a convention and met somebody who was looking for a co-sponsor. So he and I were long distance. He was from Colorado, and we would have weekly calls and share what step work we had done, and we make program calls throughout the week as well to each other. That worked out really, really well because of, you know, the small meeting that I was in, and then but I had that additional resource. So how do I sponsor? The first thing I do is I interview the person because it's really important that we're on the same page. So I ask them what their expectation of a sponsor is, as well as a sponsee. What are their needs for me? What do they expect to get from the relationship? And if we're on the same page, then we can move forward. And I always start as a temporary sponsor because I really want to make sure that this person and I sponsor men and women, that they really are committed to wanting to work this program. So, you know, if after a certain amount of time I don't see the forward motion that I think is needed, then, you know, we can revisit and end it if need be. So the other thing is for the most part, most of my sponsees have been long distance. So like Sarah mentioned, I have weekly calls with them, and that seems to work really well. And it's interesting how that if I miss a week with some of them, I just feel there's really a loss in my day because I really enjoy the hearing how they're moving forward in their program, hearing how they might have had challenges and how they were able to use various COSA tools and keep moving forward, as well as those times where they don't necessarily move forward, and we can talk about that and think of game plans where we could be able to handle the situation differently the next time it comes up. Helpful lessons that I've learned as a sponsor is that every potential sponsee is different. I'm very laid back in my sponsoring. I let the sponsee drive in the sense that however fast they want to move, however fast or slow they want to move, I'm good with that. I just need to see, you know, continuing to work on the steps. But I also, just like every sponsee is different, I'm different every time I get a sponsee because I've learned from previous sponsees, and so my style or the way that I approach a specific step might change over time. So it's a very fluid process. I am currently co-sponsoring two people. One is long distance year round. The other one is lives in Orlando. That's where I'm from. A few months each year, and the rest of the time she lives across country. And so when she's here, we have face-to-face meetings, which are awesome. But when she's not, there's a couple of different apps that you can download on either your phone or on your laptop where you can actually be able to do audio video conferencing. And that just is really a great thing that wasn't available, say, 5 or 10 years ago or longer. So I think that's it. I mean, I've been a step buddy, I've been a co-sponsor, I've been a sponsor. In terms of things that I get from my sponsor, just the wisdom.
Joey, this is just a gentle reminder to wrap up.
Okay, great. Just the wisdom and gentleness that that I get from my sponsors, I've been able to, you know, give to my sponsees. I'm just really grateful to have the tool of sponsoring and co-sponsoring. I think it's great. So thanks. I'll pass.
Great. Thank you so much, Joey. And Claudia, are you on the line now? Claudia, I can't hear you. If you are, you might still be on mute. You press *6 to unmute yourself.
Gotcha. Sorry about that. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks to all who called in. Just want to take a second to ask my higher power to guide me so that what needs to be said gets said and what needs to be heard gets heard. I've learned in sponsorship that sometimes that's a little different. I say one thing, my sponsee hears another thing, and it's all good. There are some wonderful resources that COSA offers for new sponsors and sponsees. There are resources from some step studies that are going to be available on the website. There are recordings on sponsorship. There's a 20-page COSA booklet on sponsorship. And there's a sponsorship help email. So there's a lot of things out there. The biggest thing, though, is that there are hundreds or maybe even thousands of COSA sponsors who have gone before, and they're always available to help me. I'm going to talk a little bit about my own experience. I started sponsoring pretty early. I think I was on step 3. I believe all I have to do is stay one step ahead of the people I sponsor. I'm a better sponsor today, I think, because I've been working all the steps. I've worked them all a few times. But I know that that first sponsee was very grateful for me and the little bit of wisdom I'd found in steps 1 through 3. One of the important things that I have to remember is that I have never broken a sponsee. And I've made mistakes, and I've never broken a sponsee. Sponsorship is pretty simple for me. It's love and intuition and walking with another member through the steps. Where I get into trouble is when I forget what sponsorship is, and I try to be a marriage counselor or a banker or a chauffeur, or I take some other role that has nothing to do with sponsorship. How I sponsor COSA is very different from sponsee to sponsee. Some are writers, some are drawers, some are thinkers, some do better with questions, and some are free-flowing. One of the things that I do when I start a person on a step is I ask them to define every word in the step and kind of rewrite the step in their own words, keeping in mind the original writing, sure, but making it personal. When I sponsor, I don't think it's my sponsee and me against the world. Their higher power is intimately involved in their recovery, and I'm just sort of holding my sponsee's hand and sharing what I know. Sometimes a sponsee has said something or asked something, and I don't know what to say. My first recourse is silence and a prayer for help, and usually the words are on my tongue before I can say amen. Some helpful lessons that I learned as a sponsor. The first one, I think, is the sponsorship prayer. And when I'm looking for a sponsor or I meet someone who is, I tell them about the sponsorship prayer, which is simply, God, show me who you want me to work with and make it so obvious that I know for sure it's your pick. The sponsorship booklet, again, is a huge help. I have to remember for me, just for me, that I have to have a connection with my sponsee. There was a time when I turned down a sponsee because I didn't have that connection and I felt so guilty. And a friend of mine said, you know, Claudia, they deserve a sponsor that really likes them. And I personally have tried to sponsor people that I didn't have that connection with, and it just did not work really well. I think, you know, sometimes I don't really have anything to offer. I might be in a bad place, but I have the experience of the steps. And when I see people's face light up with the the spiritual awareness, the spiritual awakening, the all of a sudden they got, I'm powerless, but there is a solution. And that's the biggest gift that I could ask. I have a sponsor that I love to bits. I called her last week, and I was having a meltdown. And I don't know what I expected from her, but what she did is she asked me to drink a glass of water, and I did, and that calmed me down. That's one of the tricks that I've learned as a sponsor. And then she talked about step two, and who is this God that I have come to believe in? And I felt myself breathing and calming down with just one step, one reminder. And I don't know if that's her. I think that's my higher power just using her. Some of my sponsees get stuck, and I can work with them. I have a problem when sponsees just stop working, so I'm not maybe as laid back as Joey. Sometimes I'll do an inventory of my relationships with my sponsor and my sponsee, and there are some great questions in the sponsorship booklet.
Claudia, this is a gentle reminder to wrap up.
Thank you. I just want to tell you, if you're looking for a sponsor, keep looking and keep praying. If you are a sponsor, know that you can't break your sponsees. I don't think. Thanks.
Claudia, before you mute, can you just give out the sponsorship help email?
Sure. The sponsorship help email is sponsorshiphelp@cosa-recovery.org, and that's not to find a sponsor, but that's, you know, you're stuck in some kind of sponsorship problem and you just want experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Claudia. So again, for anybody who's joined us late, we're hearing from each one of the panelists for 5 minutes each, and then after that we'll open it up. Everyone is on universal mute just to keep the line as quiet as possible for the recording that we're doing. So, Deborah, are you on the line?
Hello, here I am.
Hi, Deborah. Great.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Deborah, recovering COSA, and I want to say that I really enjoyed listening to my predecessors on the panel. Many things were said that were inspiring to me, and I especially liked Claudia's prayer about what we're hearing and saying, and I think I'll say a version of that, my version of that. Dear God, please help me to say the things that are right for the people who are listening today, and also help me to be confident that if I forget something, that it wasn't important and that what I am sharing is just right to the point. So thank you. How you decided to start sponsoring was the first question. And I decided to start sponsoring by being asked to sponsor. And as some others have mentioned, I was very reluctant. I had to take it to my sponsor and discuss it at great length before I could decide that I was ready. I had completed all my step work at that point that I began working with a sponsee, and it's gone beautifully. Previously to that, though, I was co-sponsoring, and co-sponsoring is real sponsoring. I mean, but it happened because that was what was available to me. I wasn't able to find a sponsor at that point, and co-sponsoring worked beautifully. I did it because I needed to do step work and I needed to have someone to do step work with me. And that worked. It worked really well. For the question, how you sponsor COSAs, something that I wanted to talk about a little bit is, although I'm generally a very relaxed sponsor, I believe, and I'm willing to let people take their own pace that they need to take in working out their problems and working through the steps, there is one area where I'm very strict. I guess that's the word. I'm surprised. That seems like a big word for me to be using. But the one area where I'm very strict is when someone is not sober in the sense that they're behaving disrespectfully. And what I mean by that is that could be behaving disrespectfully by snooping, for example, or by being dishonest in some way, or by acting out with anger and being abusive in other ways. I understand that it can take people some time to become sober, but around those things, I can be pretty strong, and even I've even talked to some people from time to time and said to them that I would not sponsor them if they didn't take it seriously to really one day at a time through prayer and by using the steps get a handle on those disrespectful behaviors. And part of that comes from like an observation I've made that sometimes COSAs can experience ourselves as victims and feel like everything has happened to us, and there can be a way of not really taking responsibility for our recovery. And so feeling entitled is if we can behave disrespectfully to others because we've been disrespected. But what I've found is that people don't really, they sometimes don't really get going in their recovery until they take responsibility for what, you know, their fourth step, what they're doing, what they're creating, and how that's happening, and taking responsibility for their sobriety. So sometimes really getting a handle on sobriety and what that means and taking that seriously can be a real turning point. People begin to work the steps with more gusto. And anyway, that's been my experience. And that's a helpful lesson that I've learned as a sponsor, is to have that be okay for me to really set that boundary. Part of it, too, is that as a sponsor, I feel that I'm modeling to my sponsee or to my co-sponsor healthy behavior, and so it's important for me not to be codependent and to allow to be spending time with someone who's continuing to be disrespectful to others. So that may, I don't know if that's controversial or not what I just said, but I think it's a really key piece for me.
Deborah, this is a gentle reminder to
thank
wrap
you.
Up.
Thank you, Kelly. I talked a little bit about co-sponsorship already, and I guess one thing I want to talk about is experiences with our own sponsors. One thing that's been very powerful for me is that over the course of the time that I've been in program, I ended my relationship with my ex-husband, and I started dating. And I'm now in a relationship. But the important part that I want to share was that having a sponsor to be, you know, walk along hand in hand with me as I went through the dating process and beginning a new relationship was the most amazing experience I think I've ever had in my life. It was so extraordinarily powerful and helpful, and something that I really hadn't anticipated or expected that I would experience from my sponsors and co-sponsors. So with that, I'll close. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Deborah. And our last panelist is Linda. Linda, are you on the line? Linda, you need to press *6 because I can't hear anything.
Hey, now?
Now I can hear you. You're on.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Hi, I'm Linda, grateful recovering COSA, and I'm pretty humbled by listening to everyone's shares. I learned something from everyone I listened to, so that was great. Well, I actually started sponsoring in COSA when I wasn't quite done with sharing my step 4 with my sponsor. We were in the middle of, partway through step 5, and I started because I got asked, and I didn't know what to do when I got asked, so I asked my sponsor if she thought I was ready to sponsor, and she was like, yes. I had been in a different 12-step program before I came to COSA, and I had gone through the steps in that program in a step group And I had tried some sponsoring, and when I later got a sponsor in that program, and I said, you know, I just don't think I'm a very good sponsor. And she said, why do you think that? And I said, because, you know, these people I tried to sponsor, you know, they didn't really succeed in their program. And she told me that she asked me if my program stayed strong while I was sponsoring them, and I said yes. And she said, well, then you're a good sponsor, because sponsoring is about strengthening your own program, and you don't have any control over how other people proceed through the steps, or whether they, you know, really choose to embrace recovery. So I've tried to remember that. That's been helpful to me. You know, it's like I show up and do what I'm led to do, and then the outcome is in higher power's hands, and it's not even my job to judge anything about the outcome, because I don't know anything. I don't know what people are supposed to be doing. So that's been helpful to me. How do I sponsor? When somebody asks me to sponsor, I ask higher power if I should say yes or not, and I follow what I hear. But I do start the relationship generally as a temporary one, and then meet with the person and give them some guidelines about, you know, just how I sponsor and what my expectations are, and then we sort of see how it works out. One of my really big expectations, sort of bottom line expectations, is that people attend meetings. Some sponsees attend lots of meetings with no prompting. Other sponsees don't. And I'm not their program. Meeting with me doesn't substitute for a meeting. And so I'm not like, you know, real like, oh, you didn't go any meetings in the last 2 weeks. You're fired. I really do try to work with people and really encourage them. But, you know, I have had to say, if you don't start going to meetings, we're going to have to stop working together on a few occasions. But I generally share what meetings do for me and why I go to meetings, sort of to help people with that. I meet with people, really, it's very varied how often I meet people. I do long-distance sponsoring. I do in-person sponsoring. I have what feels like a large number of sponsees to me right now, and so I'm not available to meet weekly with everyone I sponsor. And so I just kind of intuitively we sort of negotiate that with my sponsee. And, you know, usually when people are new, I do meet with them weekly. And I sponsor differently depending on, you know, my style. I'm pretty structured in the sense that I believe that sponsoring is about moving people through the steps. And if you just want support, you can do that through program calls. And, of course, I give my sponsees support. But I always keep redirecting back to the steps, kind of what ends up happening. And I don't actually have any requirements about how fast they move through the steps. It's more about let's just keep moving, kind of like a shark in water. Let's just keep moving and moving forward at whatever pace works. And that seems to work. I sponsor in some ways similarly to how I was sponsored in this program, in that I tend to use the instructions from the program that developed the 12 steps and apply them to our common problem, because that has worked for me. And I use all of the COSA materials as well, because those are very good.
Linda, this is a gentle reminder to wrap up.
Gotcha. And, you know, specific to our common problem, so that is really helpful. So that's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Linda. So just a couple of things that I'd like to add. Claudia, can you, when you can
unmute and give people the exact website address for people to look at the literature that you mentioned, where to find
sure.
that.
Okay, first you go to our program on the homepage, and a bunch of
and
whatever.
Can you say what the homepage is? With the
sure, the homepage is www.cosa-recovery.org. Go to our program, underneath that, other program tools and additional resources. And please know that these are not COSA approved, but they are information from COSA members that they found helpful in working the steps. So COSA doesn't endorse or oppose the contents, but they're very helpful. And there'll be more coming. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll also share as a sponsor myself that one of the tools that are that you can find at that location is the booklet on sobriety in COSA. That's been a wonderful tool as a sponsor that I use very early in sponsoring with people. So I just want to put a plug in for that. And pretty much my own experience has been, I think our panelists have covered pretty much anything that I would add with one exception that I'd like to just share, and that is how much I rely on getting experience, strength, and hope from other sponsors when I get stuck in sponsoring. And the first time that I sponsored people, in addition to reading as much as I could about sponsorship, I also talked with others who I knew were sponsoring and just asked them. So when you do a first step with a sponsee, would you mind sharing with me how you do that? And I did that through all of the steps because I really lacked any confidence that I would know what to do. And I needed the support for myself because I was worried, like someone said, about, you know, the possibility of breaking somebody or doing screwing up. So other than that, I'm going to go ahead and move us into the question portion of the workshop. And between now and 3 o'clock, the floor is open to our participants who are on the call with us. And all you need to do to ask a question is to unmute yourself by pressing *6 and then wait and just mention your name and wait until I acknowledge you. And if more than one person is speaking at the same time, I'll just, you know, put you in a queue to ask the question. So if you have a specific person that you want to address your question to, you can do that. Or if it's a general question, then I will open it up and whichever of our panels would like to respond will do so. I have asked them if they, you know, rather than going through each person, each panelist, if they basically agree or would say the same things that have already been said, that they not speak up. So please know that it's not that they are not participating. It's that we're doing this to manage time effectively and get as many questions in as we can. So, and panelists, just remember to unmute yourself if you're going to respond to a question. So are there any questions? If you are speaking a question, you are not being heard, so you need to press *6 to unmute yourself. And while you're thinking of what question you might have, why don't I go ahead? I actually got a question by email this morning from someone who cannot be on the call but wanted the panelists to respond to the following question. So we'll start it off. And those of you who are listening, if you think of a question, write it down, and I'll be opening it back up again. We are going to be timing the responses to the questions. So. Panelists, the question that was raised by email this morning is, how do you decide how many sponsees to have? And is there anybody on our panel who would like to begin with a response? And I'm going to time responses at 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Linda. I can take a stab at that.
Go ahead, Linda.
Okay, so I've been sponsoring for a few years now, and when I first started sponsoring, two sponsees seemed like really a lot, and it was all I could do. And over time, my understanding of how many sponsees was the right number for me has changed, and so that's been guided a lot by listening to Higher Power, which was something my sponsor encouraged me to do. When I asked my sponsor how many sponsees should I have, she said, ask God. In fairness, she says that to pretty much every question I ask her, so and I rely on her giving me that answer. But so the number went really high, and then I actually heard that I needed to bring it down, and so I brought it down a little, and then I just took someone new recently because God said to. And right now I have 10 sponsees, and again, that's working for me right now. I'm very transparent that I have a lot of sponsees, and I let people know kind of what I'm able to do for them. And I ask people to, right away, out of the gate, I ask people to start developing a large support network to get names and phone numbers of many other coaches that they can call for support, that they can work their 10th step with for support. And, and I think that works out well for everybody, because as coaches, sometimes we tend to fixate on one person that we're either going to rescue or be rescued by. And so I didn't understand where God was going with this, but I think it worked out okay for me. But I could see how it would be totally different for anybody and everybody, depending on where you are in any point in time. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda. Any other panelists want to respond?
Hi, this is Claudia. I think how many sponsees should I have is really similar to the question, how many kids should I have? And the driving force for answering that question for me is talking to my higher power, but it's also really looking honestly at the resources that I have. I might sponsor 10 sponsees who have been around a while. A new sponsee takes a whole lot more time, and I try to lay it out right at the beginning of our relationship, how much time I have and what I'm available for. That helps a lot. I've made mistakes. They haven't all been bad mistakes. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudia. Anybody else who would like to respond from the panel? If you're speaking, we can't hear you, so press *6 to speak. Okay, then I'm going to move on and check again in our listening audience. Are there any questions? Don't forget to press *6 so I can hear you. Okay, while we are waiting for thoughts to emerge, I'm going to ask another question that someone shared with me, and that is, what is the difference between, as a sponsor, giving advice versus experience, strength, and hope? And is it okay when a sponsee is asking specifically for advice, is it okay to do that? So is there a panelist who would like to respond to that question?
I'm Deborah. I'll give that one a try.
Great. Go ahead, Deborah.
Deborah, recovering COSA. And what I wanted to say about this is that I personally do not give advice. What I like to do, I do like to exchange experience, strength, and hope, which is basically that's me saying, well, this is what happened to me, or this is what worked for me, or this is what didn't work for me. But having said that, I don't always confine myself to thoughts that I could share with my sponsee to my experience, strength, and hope. I will do another category of, I don't know what to call, I think I would call them like things to think about. So it would be, and sometimes they're questions, like I ask questions a lot, so I'll say a question I might ask is like, what recovery tool could you use to help yourself with this problem? That's one that I might use a lot, or I also might say, what recovery tools have you used to help you, to find out what they've already thought about? And then, but then in the suggestion categories might be, here are some recovery tools you might think about that might be helpful for you. Or if another thing is if, you know, as I know my sponsee well and I might have noticed patterns, I might say, here's a pattern I've noticed. Remember the other time when you had that experience with your coworker and that happened? You know, so I might bring up some things to get to get my sponsee to think about things. But none of these to me fall into the category of giving advice. Giving advice would be, you need to do this, or, you know, this is what I want you to do, or this is what I think you should do. Now, the exception to that would be, well, this is not advice either, but like I have set boundaries with a client, and that's different, and that's around, as I mentioned before, sobriety. So I might say something along the lines of, you know, if you're not willing to take a hard look at this sobriety issue, then I won't be able to work with you, and that's my issue. That's my boundary. So again, it's not advice. The other person has the opportunity to think about how they're going to respond to that and what they're going to do. So I think that's what I have to say on that topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Is there another panelist who would like to share? Don't forget to press star 6 if you want us to hear you.
This is Claudia. Just real quick, I don't know if there are sponsors out there who have never given advice, but I'm not one of them, unfortunately. One of the things that I sometimes slide into is I'll catch myself saying, well, I would encourage you to. And unless I follow that up with the tool or the program, I'm giving advice. So I just think it's deadly for me to tell somebody else what to do. And it's part of my disease that I think I know better. I've got that I know best disease. And it's something that I really have to be honest about and I really have to pay attention to. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudia. Any other panelists who would like to respond?
Yeah, this is Linda.
Go ahead, Linda.
So I have to say that, yeah, my goal is not to give advice. Well, I don't give unsolicited advice, for sure. But sometimes when that advice is solicited, my goal is to just share my experience, strength, and hope as described very well by Deborah. But I do find myself saying things like on occasion, well, if I were in your situation, this is what I would probably do, which I think is kind of a slide into advice. So I think we do the best we can. We're human. But sometimes I actually label it. Like I'll say, okay, or I'll say, this is Linda's opinion. This is not what you should do. So I have done that too. Just just to be clear about what that I'm saying something, this is not like some program wisdom. This is just my opinion. I'll do that as well. And that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda. Any other panelists who would like to respond? Okay, I'm going to check again. Is there anyone on the call who would like to ask the panelists a question? All you need to do is press star 6 so we can hear you.
Hi, this is Amy MJ.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if COSA has any kind of formal way to connect sponsors with long-distance sponsees. I've got one long-distance sponsee that I connected with sort of haphazardly through another COSA, but I can't remember whether or not there's some place that COSAs can email or sign up to be sponsees or sponsors long-distance.
Great. Thank you, Amy. Mm-hmm. Is there someone on the panel who'd like to respond?
Hey, Amy, there is not at this time. We simply, unfortunately, don't have the number of sponsors that we would need to match up with sponsees. Sometimes I've had people, I know people have written to that sponsorship help email and have been looking for a sponsor, and what they'll get is some ideas on how to find a sponsor. And sometimes if there's somebody else that writes in and says they'd like to sponsor, we keep that on file, but there's no match.com for sponsors. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudia. Any other panelists like to respond?
This is Linda.
Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, one, add something to that, which is that the main way I've gotten long-distance sponsors is either sponsees is because I've met them at conventions or they've contacted me through the phone meetings. So most of the phone meetings do maintain contact lists that indicate people who are willing to sponsor. So that's one way, I guess, to get a long-distance sponsee is to put your name on a list like that and indicate that you're willing to sponsor. That's it.
Thanks, Linda. Anybody else?
This is Deborah, and I'm the one that spoke at the same time as Linda, but
go
I was
ahead,
going
Deborah.
To say exactly what she said. So
okay.
That's it.
Thank you. Anybody else? This is Carrie, and I will actually share. I just now thought of one idea that I've never passed on to people, but one thing that intergroups might be able to do if you are in a region that has an intergroup is to possibly, that this is more informal, to let the intergroup know that you have people who are in need of sponsorship and see if announcements can be made through the intergroup in that region to connect people who may not be, you know, sitting next to each other, but within the same region. And then I'll just share that something that I've done is whenever I hear someone say, you know, that they don't have a sponsor or sponsors available, I will often just, you know, spread the word through either to sponsees that I have who I know are looking, they're ready and willing to begin sponsoring. So I will do that personally and, you know, take what you like, leave the rest for sure between the two of them after that. And, but also, you know, if I, just by virtue of knowing people again through being at convention and being a delegate and whatnot, being able to informally just say, hey, there's a group or here's an individual Does anybody know someone who's willing to sponsor? So I think we can help each other informally in those ways. That's what I've got for that. Any other responses from our panelists?
This is Joey, and I would just say that, of course, the telemeetings are a great tool, but I think conventions, just it can't be stated enough, that's just an amazing gift to give to yourself, and then you'll meet people from around the country, and they're, you know, just because you're looking for a sponsor or a sponsor, other people are in the same boat, and I just think it's just a really great way to meet new people and possibly meet a future sponsee or sponsor. Thanks.
Thanks, Joey. Okay. So I'm going to move on and ask if there's another question from our listening audience. If you have a question, just press *6 so that you can unmute yourself and we can hear you. Okay. So I'm going to. Yes,
this
go
is
ahead.
Jill. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. My question is, as sponsors, when you're working with a sponsee, how do you determine when somebody is finished with a step, or is there like some kind of formal thing you do to encourage somebody to move on from a particular step, or what is your approach to that, from moving from one step to another?
Great, wonderful question. Thank you. So who would like to respond from the panel?
Hi, this is Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
What a great question. Thank you. I think it's different for every person, but usually what I end up hearing when I'm working with someone and it's time for them to move on to the next step is that they feel like they're ready to move on to the next step. And I often hear them talking about issues that relate to the next step. So, for example, I was recently working with a sponsee who was on her third step, and she seemed like she was, you know, developing a clear practice of turning her will and her life over to the care of God every day as she understood God. And then I heard her start talking about resentments and fears and conflicts coming up with other people and practicing turning those things over. And so then it became very clear that not only did she have an established third step practice, but perhaps she would benefit greatly from doing a fourth step and being able to look at those resentments and fears and conflicts in more detail. And then I was also working with someone recently who was just about done with her ninth step. It seemed like she was just about done. And she started really talking about, you know, fears that were coming up on a daily basis and things that were, you know, kind of happening more in real time as opposed to past harm she was wanting to clean up. And so it seemed very clear, and having known that she was just about done with her ninth step, that it was about time to move on to the tenth step. And so I look for those things, and I feel like God directs me to them, and then I bring them up with a person, and then together we determine if they're ready to move on to the next step. And I think that I love the steps, and I want to be in the solution of them. So I don't like to keep people held back on a step unless I hear that something's missing. I think that most of us benefit from being able to move along and get the tools and resources from the next step. So I try to help sponsees move along in that direction. And I feel like that's a lot of my work as a sponsor. So thanks.
Thanks, Sarah. Is there another panelist who'd like to respond?
This is Deborah.
Go ahead, Deborah.
I have something to add. Which is that one of the things that I like to remind my sponsees is that they're just because they've finished a step doesn't mean that they'll never be working with that step again. I mean, it's delightful to feel like we've formally finished with a step, but in fact, we'll be coming back to it over and over again. So as time goes by, we may realize that we did a beautiful fourth step once before, but you know what? There were some things that in that go-round that we weren't quite ready to deal with, but that we can deal with now, and so we can go back. And it doesn't mean that we don't try to do as thorough a job as we can possibly do when we're doing steps, but it's just to kind of comfort ourselves and to remind ourselves that we can always go back when we need to. And that's it.
Thanks, Deborah. Anybody else on the panel?
This is Linda.
This is Claudia.
Go ahead,
Linda,
Claudia.
First and then Claudia. No,
oh, okay.
Linda, go ahead first and then Claudia.
Okay. It's a combination of, you know, intuition about whether somebody, you know, feels done. I mean, for example, in step one, I don't always have my sponsees write the whole story and share it with a group. Sometimes we just work on their, you know, powerlessness and unmanageability. And it's a sense of, you know, because we're all going to go back to step one a bunch of times. So do they have that sense, you know, or are they still really hanging on to, I can somehow manage this? And some steps I have pretty clear criteria, like step two, if you can answer yes to the question, you know, I'm willing to believe that there's a higher power who can restore me to sanity, then we're on step three. And in step three, I always try to remember that it's a decision you're making. It's, you know, the implementation of the decision to turn our will and our lives over is in the working of the rest of the steps. So it's not quite the same bar as it might feel like to complete that step. So that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda. Go ahead, Claudia.
Hey, this is Claudia. I love that there's sort of a guarantee or a warranty when my sponsee and I make a decision to move off a step, and it is a decision that we make together. Sometimes the sponsee has said, I've got it, I'm done, and I can talk about how I feel if she's got a good understanding of a step, but I'll often go with what she thinks or he thinks, and it happens this way, that if a sponsee moves too quickly to the next step, generally they have a problem with that next step, and then I invite that sponsee to go back one. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudia. And this is Carrie. I'll add one, and then we'll move on to the next question. And that is, I often, again, based on what my higher power, because I definitely check in with my higher power on, is this person ready to move forward? Because it is so different with each person. And if I'm getting a yes from my higher power, and they are getting a no or they're uncertain, then a lot of the time, and I'm thinking specifically of one sponsee I have right now who's not quite ready to go to the eighth step. And sometimes there's reasons why someone is not ready to move forward because they're fearful of the next step that's coming up. I know that was true for me. The sixth and seventh step, you know, I've found people can, you know, it's like the magic question of how long should someone work on that combination of the sixth and seventh step before moving on to making their list of people who they've harmed. And what I have found very helpful is to, if there's any uncertainty, is to ask the person, the sponsee, to practice the step for a week. You know, I generally try to meet every week or so and report back to me on how it went. So this sponsee on the sixth and seventh step said, okay. And when we talk the next week, she had several examples of, okay, these were, you know, things that tangled me up, and this is how I applied the 6 and 7 step before I got myself in trouble, and here's an example of I couldn't manage to use the 6 and 7 step to keep me from getting in trouble in this situation. And then they see for themselves, you know, that they how they are doing with the steps, and it might help to facilitate getting an answer to for them to whether or not they're ready to move on. So is there another question from our audience? And if you have a question, just press *6 so we can hear you.
Hi, this is Amy MJ.
Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. As a follow-up to that, what if you have a sponsee who always feels ready to move on to the next step when you and your higher power feel like maybe not?
Great question.
So
thanks,
Amy. So where you're in conflict with the sponsee over whether to move to the next step.
Perfect. Thank you. Who would like to respond from the panel? If you're speaking, one of my panelists, we can't hear you, so you'll need to press *6.
This is Deborah, recovering.
Go ahead, Deborah.
What I'm thinking about this is that we can say to our sponsee that we don't feel that they're ready, and that we experience that from our, you know, from our thoughtful prayer. But in the end, they're doing the step work, and we're just consultants in a way, is I guess the way I would think of it. We're not in charge, and they're having their experience, and they're creating it for whatever reason that they're creating it. You know, like maybe it's possible that they're in denial, or another way to think about it is maybe they're just genuinely not ready, you know, to, I guess that could be denial too, you know, just generally not ready to take the next step. I'm thinking of something that happened to me that I can share. One of my sponsors at one point, I was doing the 4th step, and I mentioned to my sponsor what I had for my sister, one of my sisters, and in terms of the harms that I had done. Well, yeah, it was still in my 4th step, I think. So at any rate, when I did that, she said, "That can't be right. How is that possible?" You know, she basically didn't agree with my answer. She didn't feel that I had come up with enough places where I had had a part, you know, where I had harmed my sister in some way. And I felt shamed, honestly. It was a pretty horrible experience, actually, because I had done that step to the best of my capacity. I don't know if I could have come up with more things, but she didn't just say, "Is that it?" you know, to prompt me if there was more, but she communicated to me that she didn't think that that was possible, the answer that I had given. And so I think that was a place where I came away from that as a sponsee is that I am in charge of my own recovery, and it is right for me to think about what's working and what's not working for me. And I think that that's a place where, as sponsors, we need to really trust our sponsees and let them have their experience and just back off. So that's my thought on this topic. Thanks.
Thanks, Deborah. Is there another panelist you'd like to speak?
This is Linda. I'll just say that generally moving on to the next step, with my sponsees, most of the time my experience is that I'm saying to them, "Oh, I think you're ready to move on to the next step," rather than the other way around. But it's also, it's a negotiation, you know, it's a discussion. I ask them, how they feel. And if they feel like they're not ready, then why are you not ready? And so I guess the converse would be true. You know, if they felt ready and I felt like they weren't ready, well, why do you feel ready? And it's a negotiation process of, you know, I might say, well, would you be willing to do X, Y, and Z before moving on or whatever? And I kind of agree, like with Claudia's comments, I do, that it's organic. And so if people move forward and they're not really ready, you can move them back. So there's that too. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there another panelist you'd like to respond?
Hi, this is Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, I just want to add, I appreciate what was said prior. I just want to add that I did have a sponsee once who had just done step work much faster than I could sort of keep up with her. Like, she had done quite a lot of work on, writing out amends for the ninth step and wanted to kind of, like, meet for a whole day and talk about all of her. She had, like, a vision in mind. Like, she wanted to meet for a whole day and talk about every single amends and then, like, go make them the next day. And that's not how I work with people on the ninth step. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. And that seemed to be the right approach for her. And I don't work with people in that way on the ninth step. It felt too overwhelming for me as a sponsor to be able to help someone with that. So she and I actually agreed that the best thing she could do was go work with someone else in that approach, and that perhaps I was not the best sponsor for her. And that ended up working out very well, that she went and worked with someone else. And, you know, when I start sponsoring people, I tell them that we're both free to leave at any point in time. You know, they're not signing away their life and blood or something, you know. We're both free to leave. And if it's not serving them to work with me, or if they find someone who's better, you know, fit for them in some way, you know, I encourage them to go and work with someone else. And if, you know, and if it ever endangers my sobriety or well-being to work with them, then I would, you know, potentially move on too. And so for her, it was better for her to go get some support from someone else. So, you know, that's something that can be discussed as well. So I'm not the right sponsor for everyone, you know, and higher power may have someone else who is a better fit for them.
Oh, thanks. Thank you, Sarah. And this is Carrie. I would just add that it took me a long time in sponsoring to finally conclude that my best strategy, basically meaning I wasn't listening to my higher power, was to meet sponsees where they're at. And if they feel that they're ready to move on, I don't question that they're getting some message, whether it's their will or God's will. I'm gonna go where they're willing to go, because I really trust that a higher power takes care of each one of us, and that something inevitably will come up. And like others have said, you know, it leads to a sponsoring decision to just say, you know, it sounds like we might benefit by, let's go back to whatever step. For me, it's often encouraging them to start by going back one step, but they may wind up going back further than that and just revisiting if there's anything that they may have left out or missed or whatever. So thanks. So I'm going to pose one last question. Well, let me ask first, is there anybody else who's on the call who has a question you'd like to pose? Okay, so here's a question that I've heard through my service work at the international level that I'd love to hear our panel respond to, and that is, what suggestions do you have for me? I'm in a new meeting where everybody is a newcomer, and there is no one who is able to sponsor help get people going on the steps. So is there anyone on the panel who'd like to respond?
Hey, this is Claudia. I don't know what your availability is, but it sounds like a great opportunity to do a step study. Again, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of information on one step study on the website, and soon there will be another one. But I would love to help you. A lot of people would love to help you. And go for it. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudia. Anybody else like to share?
Yeah, this is Linda.
Go ahead, Linda.
Yes, step study is a great approach. Also, co-sponsoring, finding someone or a couple of someone in your group that want to, you know, you can, I guess that's a sort of a hybrid of step group and co-sponsoring, but you can work through the steps together as step buddies. You can go, we mentioned on a previous call, you can go, you can start attending phone meetings and get those contact lists and make program outreach calls and try to find a long-distance sponsor. That's often a very workable strategy. And you can come to a convention because if you come to a convention with the goal of finding a sponsor, and you then you ask higher power for help with that, and you keep your eye out, and you ask people, you will find a great sponsor at convention for sure. That's it.
Thanks, Linda. Anybody else who'd like to respond?
Yeah, this is Joey. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Joey.
So, yeah, so when I moved to Orlando, the group was just starting, and there was all kinds of people, and so we started a step group, which was really great. And then it closes after so many weeks because of the kind of stuff that we share. And so months pass and a new group wants to start it. And so what I would do is I would meet with them after or before a meeting and just share my experience, strength, and hope on how we did our step group, kind of like modeling and kind of paying it forward. So thanks.
Thanks, Joey. Anybody else want to respond?
Yeah, this is Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I just want to add, I like what everyone else said, I just want to add that, you know, I've never turned down a request, even when I'm not available for sponsorship, to have a call with someone to talk about a particular step or to meet with someone for a cup of coffee to talk about a particular step. And I've also never turned down a request if someone has reached out to me and asked for my ESH on how to find a sponsor. So I always have time for one or two of those, you know, kind of calls, even if I'm not available for actual sponsorship. And my experience has been that oftentimes, you know, when people want what we have, they are willing to go to any lengths to get it, which means they will call or reach out to 30, 40, 50 COSA people and keep asking and asking. And I sponsored many people today, actually, who asked me, and I said I wasn't available for sponsorship, and then they waited 6 months and asked me again, and then, you know, and then it happened that I had availability or whatever. So I think I would just encourage people, if you're not, even if you don't have something in your area, to just keep talking about it, keep reaching out to people outside of your circle through telephone meetings or get involved with the online meetings, or as others suggested, try to hit up a convention, you know. And I think you know, and keep, I like Claudia's sponsorship prayer, so, you know, keep praying about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Anybody else who wants to respond? This is Carrie, and I'll just add, because, yeah, I love the responses so far, very helpful suggestions. And I know something that I've done that I really loved doing was, if it was a meeting that was geographically in my region, I'll offer to go and speak about a step or speak about how I defined my sobriety, whatever. So a meeting that's new with nobody who has sponsors available but wants to move the meeting forward, just
asking if you have an inner group or if you just can, you know, call one of the, you can go online to any of the meetings that are listed online and reach out to meetings and ask if there is someone from a meeting nearby who would be willing to come and speak at the meeting to share experience, strength, and hope on finding sponsors or on a step that's in support of the meeting. Also, asking if there are other meetings that you become aware of, maybe as you're doing this, who could be sort of temporary sponsors to your meeting. So the meeting adopts sort of a informal relationship with another meeting, just exchanging, whether it's exchanging emails or whatever, or in some more formal cases, like what Claudia was mentioning is, conference call where meetings that are in two different geographies can be doing study together with, you know, one meeting that might have more experience, strength, and hope with the steps until people can find sponsors. The one thing I guess I would say is don't wait to start doing things until the conditions are perfect. That's one of the things that I used to feel like I had to have all systems, you know, all the stars aligned before I could move forward in order to be legitimately doing my work. And I do want to say I would never tell anybody to work the steps on their own. So I'm not talking about doing that, but reaching out and just asking questions is, to me, you know, an indication of someone who's willing to go to any length for their recovery. So that's what I will end with there. And got dogs barking out here. We're going to bring our meeting to a close. And I want to just thank all of our panelists, Sarah S. from Oakland, Joey V. from Florida, Claudia from Arizona, Deborah S. from, Deborah, remind me where you are now. I'm thinking about where you were.
Bloomington, Indiana.
Thank you. Linda P. from the Bay Area and myself from the Bay Area. Thank you for to all of our participants who have been on and asked questions. And with that, I'll just say thank you, everyone. And we'll bring the meeting to a close, and I'm going to stop recording. If you have any questions, I can stay on the line for a few minutes after I stop the recording. Hold on just a minute.